She is part of a team conducting studies into Indigenous women's sport and recreation, and a standout finding that has been the barriers these women face. To discuss this and other facets of her research, Dr. Michelle O'Shea has joined us now. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for joining us this Wednesday morning.
Pleasure.
Now, through your research, what has emerged as some barriers to participation for Aboriginal and or Torres Strait Islander women in sport?
Yeah, so certainly prior to colonisation, physical activity was very much intertwined with Indigenous Australian women's lives. And activities such as gathering food and in particular swimming. My colleague Megan Stronach has actually charted a history of women swimming, and there was this very rich history, and it was actually women that taught communities to swim. But what we've actually seen is that for a number of reasons, women's participation in these communities has significantly decreased. And a few of the key rationales, certainly for older Indigenous women, very much past racist beliefs and practices very much continue to inhibit their involvement. And as I mentioned, my colleagues Megan and Hazel conducted some research where they actually explored women's recall of their past experiences. And they talked about how, for example, their involvement was inhibited by sort of experiences in their childhood. And one particular respondent talked about being segregated in swimming pools and how this segregation and racial vilification based on her skin colour meant that even as an adult, she was too scared to learn. So what we are also seeing as emerging from findings of our research is that this harm and these negative experiences, they're very persistent, but often they're quite subtle. And that makes them difficult to name and indeed to formally challenge. But if we think a little bit about women, particularly living in remote Indigenous communities, transport costs and logistics very much impact their participation in organised sports. And the cost of registration, things like uniform purchase, really mean that the cost is very prohibitive. And what we also see is in terms of the ongoing effects of colonisation, they've very much resulted in some Indigenous and Torres Strait Islander women actually rejecting calls for them to become involved in what are ostensibly westernised sport. And so their preference is for more culturally acceptable activities such as craft and music. But one really interesting further facet of our prior research is how Indigenous women view the time that they spend at leisure engaging in physical activity and sport is actually selfish because it takes them away from their family care commitments and responsibilities. So we very much see these women taking on an enabler role, but in doing so, it means that their time for recreation, for leisure and for sport is often lost because they're enabling the participation of their children and others within their families.
Now, I wanted to talk about the Closing the Gap. Just a few days ago, the government unveiled 16 targets for Indigenous advancement under the Closing the Gap agreement.
Yeah.
While sport might not be a focus in this, how do you think it could be utilised to help close the gap?
Yeah, and that's such an apt question. And I think certainly we've seen several Senate inquiries, one in 2006, which very much was prompted by concern over Indigenous and Torres Strait Islander women's lower participation rates compared with non-Indigenous Australians. And so what that research and what that associated committee and recommendations suggested was that that we should very much address the cultural barriers to these women's and these communities' involvement. And so there was very much found to be a lack of cultural awareness, very much by Indigenous deliverers. And again, that sort of goes back to that westernised model and that discourse. So what that sort of report suggested was that cultural issues tended to be exacerbated by social economic issues, such as what we mentioned before in terms of lack of transportation, particularly in remote and regional areas. So I guess while some of these structural issues are perhaps more easily redressed, it's very much those cultural issues. And so what we see is an important movement or step toward cultural exchange and listening as being really important. And so in terms of the research that myself and colleagues have undertaken, we've very much drawn on methodologies whereby there's been a cultural sensitivity and approaches such as yarning circles. And the research has been very much underscored by a partnership discourse and participant-led underpinnings. And so some very recent research we did around digital health trackers in Indigenous and Torres Strait Islander women's health and physical activity very much was underpinned by that participative, participant-led approach. And we drew on yarning circles. And in so doing, there was that cultural exchange and understanding. And it was based on a strengths perspective. So very often we see when we talk about Indigenous and Torres Strait Islander women, it's a deficit model where this was empowering and there was agency and they led the discourse and obviously then the outcomes as well.
It's absolutely an important topic and hopefully something where we can take the research and take the topics from the reconciliation and from the closing the gap to hopefully get to a more inclusive and welcoming environment when we get to the 2023 Women's World Cup, which is very exciting. Unfortunately, we do have to leave it there, but thank you so much for joining us.
Wonderful. Lovely to chat with you.